What's going on, grandkids? Welcome to a very special edition of the Stunt Granny Audio. This is Eric Nelson, along with Dusty Giebink. Dusty, how are you tonight?
Woo! I am ready to rumble, baby!
And resident Stunt Granny historian Dan Keister. How are you, my friend?
I am doing very well, sir. Doing very well.
All right, good deal. Well, I'll tell you what, I love saying that these are very special audios, but this one actually is special. I think I say that every other show that I introduce, but I'm dumb like that. What we're going to do tonight, this is sort of a real-time description, real-time discussion of an old-time event. We are watching the Royal Rumble match from 1992, and before we get too much further into the discussion, I want everybody out there to get out your DVDs or dust off your pirated versions of this show online. Dusty, explain why. Explain what we're doing tonight on this show.
All right, well, I've always been a fan of Mystery Science Theater, especially the Joel seasons, and, it came to me that it would be fun to do something like that with wrestling matches, and, I brought it up with you two guys present, and we all kind of agreed that Royal Rumble 92, largely considered probably the best Rumble, maybe 1990 as a case, but, yeah, just overall a very, very good match and a good way to start this and see if there's any traction on it as a possible regular feature on Stunt Granny.
There you go. So, yeah, in the Mystery Science Theater 3000, I guess that's not the right word I'm looking for, but in that vein, the three of us are going to start the Royal Rumble match from 1992 at the same time, and we're just going to talk about the event. We're going to put things into context, I hope, and just lend our insights and whatnot and our memories and all that from the Royal Rumble 92. And Dan, actually, what were you doing during this event and around this time?
Yeah, so this would have been sophomore year in college. I'll date myself a little bit since this is almost 20 years old now. I guess almost 19 years old, so we don't want to add another year yet. But I was in the fraternity house, and we had Sunday night meetings always every Sunday. And that precluded me from buying this pay-per-view because I thought, I guess I could have taped it, is what I should have done. But I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to get to see it, and I'm gonna miss the event for a meeting. And then I just kind of figured, you'd think I'd have been a little smarter to the business, the sport, or whatever at this point. But I kind of figured I wanted Ric Flair to win so bad. I mean, my all-time favorite wrestler, there was no question, and I really didn't like 1980s WWF, and so I was really excited about this thing, but I thought, you know what, they're just going to take another opportunity to bury Ric Flair the way they buried Harley Race, the way they buried Dusty Rhodes, and even though they promoted him pretty well up to this point, I just didn't think they'd follow through and have him win. So I sat there in my room and got fined for missing the first however many minutes of the meeting, even though everybody wanted to know who won. And, I mean, wrestling was a lot more popular than – maybe the college people still watch it, I don't know, but I don't think to that degree. And I sat in my room and watched it on Scramble Vision. And
now, wait a minute. Did you have I don't know the hierarchy of a fraternity. Is there a president or something like that or a godfather?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We had a president and vice president. I was just – I mean, I was sophomore year, so I had been inactive for, a year, I guess.
Was your president Cowboy Bill Watts? Is that why you got fined for being late?
Yeah, no, we got fined for basically everything in the fraternity. It was never, I don't remember what it was, $5 or $10 or something. It didn't kill me.
Yep,
but,
yeah,
if you missed a meeting or were late, you
what
were
fraternity
fine.
Were you a part of?
I'm proud alumni of the Kappa Alpha Order, Drury College in Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, I see.
Good deal.
We were fined for the Drury. We
was John F. Kennedy a member of your fraternity? No, huh?
No, I'm pretty sure he wasn't.
Some other fraternity then, huh?
Yeah, it must have been yours, I'm guessing.
Oh, I guess.
That's impressive.
Dusty, were you ever,
I think Mark Aldrin was in our fraternity. I should know, like, our famous people, and
I still
do the four founding fathers, but that's about it.
Dusty, did you ever do anything and get fined, like, one keg stand or something like that?
No, just money. I got fined a lot of money for being late to meetings and shit. But
awesome.
I had the school newspaper and stuff going on, so
that's right.
You know, I had a whole. I was super busy all 4 years in college because I was the editor of the newspaper and I was in student senate and I had the fraternity. So Yeah. Nary a free second for young Dustin.
Well, I didn't do anything in college except drink like I should have been in a fraternity. So,
right on, right on.
Cheaper way to do it.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I didn't get fined for being late to my own party.
That's always good. So we've established I kind of watched it. I mean, I definitely followed it live and was jumping up and down and all excited when Ric Flair won. Did you guys see this event as it happened, or what was the story?
I didn't watch it on Scramble Vision, I don't think. And I'd watched a few of them up to that point, but I'm pretty sure I didn't see it, so I would have had to have waited until primetime wrestling the next night to find out what happened. And, of course, I'm kicking myself, you know, because this is huge. I loved Ric Flair, too. As soon as my family got cable in fall, it was late fall of 1990, we started getting TV Guide. And I'd never heard of NWA wrestling, only WWF. Was flipping through TV Guide, saw NWA wrestling at 5:05 Central on TBS. I'm like, what the hell are these letters and what does this mean? flipped to the station and saw the Black Scorpion and Sting feuding. And thank God the Black Scorpion became Ric Flair. I was familiar with him from the After magazines also.
Yeah.
But huge Ric Flair fan, and I was so excited to see him in the WWF. Didn't see this show live, but was ecstatic when I found out he won the belt. Ran to my local video store as soon as the VHS came out, and God knows how many miles I put on that thing renting it, and I probably kept that video store in business for years based on that video alone. Dusty, what about you?
Well, I lived way up in the country where we couldn't even get cable, and satellite dishes hadn't been invented yet. And it would be a few years yet before I realized I could go to my grandparents' house and have them order the show. So basically, yeah, I would wait for it to come out on VHS, and I'd either buy it or rent it that way. I was watching all the syndicated shows on NBC or whatever, and that was the one thing that was easier for me to follow the WWF because they had Superstars and Challenge on, like, NBC affiliate. And the NWA syndicated show, I had to turn the antenna halfway to some station I hardly ever watched. And, yeah, it was just easier.
You had to turn the other dial on the TV to see it.
right.
Yeah, and we probably want to get to this because I know it's a pretty long show, but just I didn't have cable until I went to college, but I bought both pay-per-views, the two Flair Fujinami pay-per-views, the one from Japan and the one from Florida. Leading up. So it's not that I never bought any pay-per-views, but again, I didn't feel like I could necessarily watch the entire show, so I didn't.
Right.
But and I was at, I think I mentioned this in a previous audio, I was at the Black Scorpion Unmasking in St. Louis.
That's sarcastic. That's so great.
That's such a crummy show with that tournament.
It seemed cool to me. I mean, Stan Hansen, I was hoping he'd win, but, you know, it was...
Well, any show from, like, 90, 91, 92, if I have the videotape, which I do of that show, I just watch the shit out of it, whether I liked it or not.
You know, it sounds really stupid, but I got, the crowd went nuts for the Skyscrapers, and that was actually pretty cool when they went out and beat up those kind of loser guys.
Now, who was actually, remind me, who was in the Skyscrapers at that point?
It was Sid Vicious and Dan Spivey. It was like a reunion that night.
People love Sid Vicious. People would boo Dan Spivey just because he was the one in the ring.
Yeah, because they wanted Sid. Yeah.
Yeah, they would boo him until he would tag Sid, and they would go ape him.
I mean, I should have known better, but I thought, I was like, I'll admit it, I was really fired up about seeing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you thought, well, you get to see Japanese wrestlers in the tournament. I mean, that match they had with the Steiners wasn't too bad in the finals. Maybe people rated it bad, but it seemed pretty good live, and I kind of figured when Ric Flair didn't show up to fight Doom that he was going to be the Black Scorpion. But, of course, they didn't bother to tell us in the arena who it was. Like, people were all walking out. Who was the Black Scorpion? I mean, we pretty much figured it was Ric Flair, but then somebody's like, yeah, it was Ric Flair.
Right.
Okay.
Nice.
All right, one more thing here to set the table. Dan, you said that you wanted Ric Flair to win going into the show. I wanted Sid to win. He was my favorite at the time, still is. Eric, who did you want to win? Were you Hulkamaniac?
Yeah, if you say Hulk Hogan, the audio's over.
Yeah, I'm hanging up right now.
To be honest with you, I don't remember. I would have been okay if Ric Flair won. I'm trying to honestly think going into the show, like, who was hot at the time. And I don't even know if I was thinking along the lines of, okay, here's your top five options. You know, I was down with the idea that Hulk Hogan and Undertaker got to draw numbers 20 to 30. I thought, oh, they're going to have the advantage, you know, whatever. Maybe that's going to come with something. I really don't remember having a favorite going into it.
This was the deepest Royal Rumble ever, I would say, and we'll talk about that as we start the tape. But
oh, God, yeah, but you're right. Talent-wise, you know, they've said for years and years the most star-studded Royal Rumble. Well, we're about to start the most star-studded Royal Rumble of all time, and
oh,
we're going to
yeah.
put those into context. So,
even the chunk is fun chunk.
Yeah, I think we'll have plenty of time to tell stories during this. Maybe we ought to start it up.
All right, sounds good to me. All right, how about a little 3-2-1 countdown? Does that sound good?
I have blue screen. Does anybody else? I don't know if that's going to slow me up or not.
It shouldn't slow you down.
Okay.
Okay. So, all right, I'm ready in 3-2-1. Bing. Oh, and the dulcet tones of Howard Finkel welcome us to the Royal Rumble matchup.
But, you know, it was great to hear him back on Raw recently, and I know Bruce Mitchell and others have mentioned that, but
yeah,
much better than what they have today.
I was going to jokingly say if Jason Powell was doing this with us, he'd be creaming in his denims right now. he's got some sort of hard-on over Howard Finkel, but he is classic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was great at his job, and the point that's been made is that, you know, having announcers that aren't all that model-esque and attractive kind of makes your wrestlers look a little better by contrast. So,
true.
Definitely.
I mean, Gordon Solie is still, best announcer I've ever heard, and he had credibility, but not matinee idol looks.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather have short and ugly announcers.
I think so.
And your wrestlers stand out more, not just as big, but, you know, better looking.
Right. Yeah, and not to speak to the looks of like a Todd Grisham or a Matt Stryker or something like that. And even Matt Stryker, you know, there's a reason why Jesse Ventura only did so few interviews backstage with other wrestlers, because you don't want to put a wrestler next to a wrestler or an ex-wrestler if you can help it. You want that Mean Gene type. You want that sawed-off 5'6", balding, mustachioed, you know.
Now, Jack Tunney is in the ring. Do we want to tell any stories about him other than, you know, he was a pretty good
figurehead.
Other than
he's the biggest badass in wrestling history.
Yeah, old Jack on the take Tunney. Promoter from Toronto. This was back when WWF had presidents, and I can't think of all the presidents they had. I know they had one that had some sort of Japanese affiliation. He was Japanese. I don't think
Tunney
was
president a long time. I mean, Gorilla Monsoon was a president later.
Yep.
Not for very long. But
the best president since Noriega. not to interrupt the Jack Tunney talk, but you might have missed this card, most of it, Dan, but honestly, the best part, the Rumble match itself is awesome, but the best part of the show is the commentary of Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan.
Yep. Yep.
Well, during this match or just throughout the show?
Throughout the show. Like, even during the opening match, he's on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I
don't have the affinity for Gorilla Monsoon that a lot of people do.
Really, the best part about Gorilla is that he tried to keep Bobby Heenan in check. Like, their dialogue is great. And this, the two of them calling the Bushwhackers match with Jameson at ringside and talking about how Jameson went down to the beach and left a ring around the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, that match is still taking place somewhere.
Oh, gross. Yeah, that's back when the Royal Rumble, and I guess they kind of still do this now too, but they had four matches plus the Rumble. The Rumble was every 2 minutes a wrestler would come to the ring. Now it's usually shaved down to 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Now there's usually some sort of skit where Mae Young takes her bra off.
Yeah.
There's at least 12 Brother Love shows, and Mike Adamley standing at ringside talking about Jess Harvey. But back in these days, this is when you had 20-minute matches, like four 20-minute matches before the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Well, the match is starting now, if we're all in the same time. We've got Ted DiBiase and British Bulldog.
British Bulldog pulled number one, DiBiase pulled number two.
Yep.
Well, and there was a discussion recently on the tour tier talking about guys that should have been world champion or could have been world champion in that different era. And I would maybe not WWF champion, but I would still put Ted DiBiase at the top of that list.
You know, DiBiase, I think he could have been WWF champion in 1988, and I think he would have done just as good a business as Randy Savage.
I agree with that. I mean, that was obviously seriously considered, and you know, they well, and theoretically, they could have done that for 6 months and had Savage potentially win the title from him if they wanted to kind of play out that Savage Hogan storyline a little bit longer, but. But yeah, I mean, he you know, he was excellent in his role and a great wrestler. And I know people talk about those interviews on the 57 Gold, which I think they're getting pulled off at the end of the year. And the DiBiase ones may not be available anymore. But the interview that he had on there was very good. Talked about some of that stuff.
DiBiase was just eliminated in short order. And DiBiase was the only guy. I'm going to try to keep an eye out for this. This match is 19 years old, but I'm still not totally sure that I think DiBiase is the only guy that Ric Flair doesn't actually come in contact with during this match.
Yeah,
that's a mistake. It was a mistake to eliminate him before Flair came into the ring. They should have had some contact.
No, absolutely, because those guys had history, and we've talked about that, the greatest hour of televised wrestling ever in Mid-South between Flair and DiBiase. I mean, DiBiase was considered to be NWA champion for a long time, and here they're walking by each other as we're talking, as Ric Flair comes to the ring. Bobby Heenan, here's where Bobby Heenan, I think, is at his best, just crying.
Coronary on commentary.
In sadness. I'll turn it up just a little bit. I don't want to bleed into the audio, but.
I had to turn mine up a tick or two also.
But,
yeah,
I mean, this
point.
Is great stuff.
As many guys as Ric Flair had history with in this match, that's a really good point that DiBiase is the one that he doesn't come in contact with.
And I mean, it only would have taken like a minute. DiBiase would have only had to be in there like a minute more, and they could have got rid of him right away.
And to play devil's advocate, what this did, though, is that it you said, okay, British Bulldog's pretty badass. He just knocked out DiBiase, who was somewhat of a Ric Flair type. It's like Ric Flair is immediately in jeopardy. He's in here with this steroided up freak that could knock him out.
Probably cracked out of his mind.
Yeah. There's no telling if he's completely coherent.
I'm sure Flair's going to carry him for the next 2 minutes. Dusty, it seems like British Bulldog. I mean, we all kind of we understand what level he reached in the WWF, and that's kind of his station in life, to borrow a phrase from Bill Watts, but it seemed like he was always treated favorably in these Royal Rumbles.
They always, I think he was a Vince McMahon favorite, probably because he had nice big muscles. He came back when Dynamite Kid didn't.
He was loyal,
What's that?
He
was loyal, he said.
He was a lot into it.
Yeah, definitely. He was under consideration for the Diesel title reign.
Oh, really? Well, that would make sense. I mean, they didn't have a lot of and I thought at one time he was going to I thought WCW might have pushed him to the top there when he was feuding with Vader, which
He did have a main event match against Vader.
Yeah, and those matches weren't that bad. I mean, Vader was really good too, so that was part of it. But and here comes one of the Nasty Boys. Oh boy,
Nasty fellow.
Yeah, you're right. Though, as good as Vader was in '92, there was something about him in '93. He had He had a great match. I can't remember when it was, with Dustin Rhodes. Good match with Davey Boy Smith, who was probably just as much on drugs then as he was with the show we're watching right now, and years before that too.
Well, I mean, if you go back and look at Davey Boy Smith as a British Bulldog, I mean, the physical transformation is just ridiculous. I mean, it's striking to see him. I haven't watched this match in some time, and to see how clearly steroided up he was. Oops, or whatever we're supposed to say, not get sued. But since he's no longer with us, I guess
you
don't
can
have
just
to worry
say
about
oops
that.
After
too.
Everything, and it's okay. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the stunt granny clause. Yeah, for a guy who's probably legitimately 5'9" and maybe 5'10" on a good day, Davey Boy Smith to be billed at 275 pounds is like scary.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they might have inflated it by a few pounds, but he's jacked for being
shorter.
No, he's
jacked to the gills. I mean, there's no question. So, yeah.
It warms my heart to see the Nasty Boys in here. That's something sorely missing in today's wrestling, just a fat brawler.
Yeah, well, and kind of the similar tag team also.
And there he
goes. Yeah, really. Not just the throw together.
Yeah, he's no longer in the match there, Mr. Knobs.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, they've. Getting back to what we were talking about before, I mean, they have made British Bulldog. I mean, he's eliminated the other two guys here, and you have some sense of trepidation if you're here for Ric Flair. So that's I could kind of I would have preferred to see him have contact with DiBiase too, but I see what they were doing there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that before too.
And
Haku
is now approaching the ring. So
yeah,
you know, I mentioned before we talked that obviously I wanted Ric Flair to win this match badly. I was so angry at WCW. This would have been after my freshman year of college when Ric Flair left the company and they had the worst Great American Bash ever with the Luger Wyndham main event. I hand wrote a note to Ted Turner and sent it in to Atlanta, Georgia, and got a nice form letter back from whatever Jim Hurd's secretary was. So I should have kept that. It was kind of interesting to see, but I was just like, and I explained, I'm like, yes, I know this isn't a legitimate sport. It's not like, you know, the Kentucky Wildcats were NCAA champions and they don't get to defend their title, but you just lost the biggest piece of talent you've ever had because you're a bunch of idiots. And you bring in the, you know, these ridiculous people, and I don't remember if that was pre or post Ding Dong, but, you know, some of these just awful things that Jim Hurd was behind. And I was not a smart fan by any means there, but was very upset. Rick was being an opportunist here in the match, which, again, fits his character well.
Yeah, were you subscribing to Torch, Observer, anything like that then when you wrote that letter?
No, not at all. I was taking the aftermags. I didn't get a copy of the Torch, which, you know, I think we talked about this in the ECW thing. I got a little upset with the people at the Torch because they were so adversarial to some degree with ECW, when the only way I ever got a Torch is because I bought ECW videotapes. That's where they got my address, because it was the same misspelling that was on the ECW stuff that was sent to me.
That's funny.
I didn't get my first Torch till 96. I got something from Eric Chamel in like 93, and I thought about subscribing, and I didn't.
And I did. So
yeah, we've talked about him before, I know. And it was a decent enough, you know, decent enough publication, but I just thought, I kind of like to watch wrestling not knowing what's happening and being in suspense.
Now, here comes Shawn Michaels.
The one reason I liked Eric is because it seems like Cornette was one of his sources.
Mm-hmm.
He's got good Cornette news out of him. So,
yeah.
I don't know why I didn't. I mean, that was the reason I didn't subscribe, because I liked being kind of a mark.
Oh,
really?
Totally.
But at the same time, I remember I read that thing like five times and they sent it to me. Shawn Michaels.
Now, I should note here, Shawn Michaels in the ring. This is fresh off his heel turn.
Yeah, you just put – well, there's a super kick.
Okay.
Oh,
you're about 2 seconds ahead of me. I was afraid of that on the pause.
All right. Do you need me to put a little pause in here for 2 seconds?
If you guys want to. I mean, you're about a second and a half, 2 seconds ahead of me, so if you just want to click, that wouldn't hurt.
All right. That might do a little bit. There's Davey Boy almost putting Shawn Michaels out.
That was very convincing, actually, because he was on a series of clotheslines, and it looked like he was going to put him out.
Yeah, Davey's been on a tear through this match, and so, of course, there's, you know, the possibility. But, yeah, so the Shawn Michaels is kind of I can't think of another wrestler who did this in years past, maybe like Rick Martel in 91. But this is sort of that spider monkey always hanging on, always on the brink of elimination character that WWE has been recycling for the last 19 years, basically. And
it always struck me that he was trying to out-flare Flair.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you can see some of the movement. Yeah, there he kind of threw himself over the top rope.
Right.
There
he
did the Ric Flair crotch. Yeah, he's definitely getting people's attention here.
Mm-hmm. One of the great things, too, you can tell how over – and, you know, Ric Flair is still fairly new to the company at this time, less than 6 months, I think. In fact, probably 4 months.
Yeah, it's
going to
be about exactly 6 months, yeah.
And then you could tell how over he was with the Northeast crowd. By the fact that somebody like Haku could go after him and get cheered. you know, or somebody like Shawn Michaels could go after him and get cheered fresh off of putting Marty Jannetty through a plate glass window.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, and Tito Santana's in the ring, who I think's underrated. I mean, you know, talented guy. I wasn't a big early 80s WWF follower because I didn't have cable either, but, you know, I had a pretty good career as well. But, you know, if you think back to that Ric Flair-Terry Funk match, and is this in Albany? I mean, that was in Troy. That's basically
that's
the same
Troy,
area.
Yeah. Yep,
and,
that's right.
And I mean, he was over in that match. I mean, you talk about crowd heat. I mean, that thing was off the charts. And that was about a year and a half before this, less than that, maybe a year and 2 months. So
let's see. Yeah, late 89 to
November
early
89 to January of 91. So
yeah, about January 92. So it would have been about two years and a couple
two
of months.
Two and a half. Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
But
so. Yeah,
but
good
yeah,
point.
I mean,
I guess New York is an exclusive WWF territory.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But
oh, there's your first low blow of the evening.
I think he was just trying to pick him up.
Yeah.
that would be what Bobby Heenan might say. I mean, again, I don't have it loud enough to hear his commentary. I may have to watch this again after we get done just because Bobby Heenan is at his best at this.
Yep, he really is. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a part of the match where two guys pair up and, you know, nothing really special happening here. I don't know, Tito Santana really for the – he spent, what, I don't know, at this point 8 years or probably a little bit longer than that in the WWF. And he'd been
He was there in 83, I'm fairly certain, because he was there during the – he and Greg Valentine were trading the Intercontinental title
during
the Hulk Hogan, you know, the whole nine yards with him. So
yep, and on the lead-up to WrestleMania, and that was the big – The big feud that for some reason didn't culminate at WrestleMania, they ended up going with Greg Valentine versus the Junkyard Dog.
That's right. Yeah, that's. I don't know if they weren't ready to go with Tito at that point or what.
They were saving the match for a future Madison Square Garden.
Yep.
Yeah, they probably figured WrestleMania was going to sell out without one extra crouton on the salad. So yeah.
Yeah, that was a different attitude then. That's right. I mean, you think you had. King Kong Bundy and a squash at that WrestleMania. I mean, it wasn't exactly the same as what we see today. So.
No. I mean, it really was a house. I think they had honestly, I could be mistaken, but I think they had just had a house show at MSG the week before or a little bit before.
Week or two. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a glorified house show with Mr. T and Liberace and the Rockettes and Billy Martin and
Muhammad Ali.
You know, Muhammad Ali, yeah, those are like the big draws, you know, not even.
Well, and it might have been, I mean, really, he was running off the old crowd from, you know, from the people that loved wrestling in the Northeast. I mean, I had a real, throughout the 80s, I just hated the WWF. I mean, it was just so bad compared to the NWA, and, you know, I didn't go to their shows. I watched Saturday Night's Main Event sometimes, but even then, if I was getting Mid-South Wrestling from 10 to 11 at night, I'd tape it. There's no way I was watching. Or, well, I'd tape Mid-South and kind of watch it most of the time when Saturday Night's Main Event was starting because it was a better show.
Yep. Tito about to throw Shawn Michaels out, and Shawn Michaels comes under the bottom rope again. I don't know how many times I really feel like pointing that out during this match.
You'll get sick of it.
Many.
You'll
yeah.
get sick. Whether you, I mean, that style of WWF wrestling is very love it or hate it, but got to give credit to Pat Patterson for his booking within that context. He was a very precise mathematical thinker.
He was a great storyteller.
We've talked about that before. And I hate to interrupt, Dusty, but
Gary
Von Erich's coming to the ring, and this, you know, this is real history here. I mean, if you, and Ric Flair's waiting him out, which is kind of cool to see. I mean, he's ready to hook it up with Kerry Von Erich, and this is really what got me excited about wrestling, because the first show we got was World Class, and when Kerry Von Erich won the world title, I mean, you would have thought that America won the Olympics at everything. I mean, it was so well promoted on World Class Wrestling, and yeah, they've got Kerry Von Erich, who clearly had his problems at this point, putting on some real offense and getting people excited, and it was just, you know, this was one of those things. I mean, clearly this card was booked to have all these kind of flashback moments with Ric Flair, and this is really the first big one.
Well, it really was, because look at the career of Kerry Von Erich. He won the Intercontinental belt in his second match, basically.
Yeah, well, because they knew that they couldn't worry about building him up because he could get drugged out and be in trouble at any point.
Yeah. He loses the belt December of 90 and kind of flounders after that. I mean, he beats Dino Bravo, a bloated Dino Bravo at WrestleMania 7. Stumbles his way through a six-man tag at SummerSlam in 91. Wasn't really in a featured match at Survivor Series 91.
Doesn't really do the worst Survivor match ever.
It really was. Yeah, him and Colonel Mustafa and Duggan and Berserker and Hacksaw. Well, I already said Hacksaw and God. Tito, no offense, Tito.
Tito.
Shameful. It was in Big Bully Busick was supposed to be in it. That probably would have made it better.
It would have.
But, yeah, Tito had nothing going on at this point. So I mean,
because it was supposed to be a team of ridiculous heel gimmicks, but then Big Bully didn't make it, and they replaced him with just Hercules. So.
Right, yeah. Terrible. So, yeah, Tornado had nothing going on at this point. Gets a pop on name recognition, basically. And, yeah, so we have a flashback moment, and then 2 minutes later, here comes Repo Man.
And he doesn't want to go in the ring, which is fine. This wasn't my favorite character.
Smart strategy. He's taking his time.
No, that's right. And they kind of abuse that later, and the one with Vince McMahon where he didn't go in or whatever. But, there should be countouts in the Royal Rumble, really, just to kind of maintain some credibility, I would think.
Right.
But,
there are a lot of wishy-washy rules in the Royal Rumble. One that's going to come up later with Randy Savage that gets changed basically every year on a whim.
Yep.
You know, I'd like to think that I don't know, what are we at? 88 was the first televised Rumble, so by 2017 when they hit the 30th Rumble, I'm sure there will be 30 guys who technically haven't been eliminated from the Rumble. If they're all alive, they should all get together on an independent card somewhere and have, like, a consolation bracket Royal Rumble. And Texas Tornado with the Carl's Jr. logo on his tights.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I know they have to have their. But that was a nice thing. At least they called Ric Flair Ric Flair, and they let him be Ric Flair, basically. But, I mean, really, did they think Texas Tornado was going to sell more merchandise than Kerry Von Erich? I mean, at this point, I mean, it wasn't like Kerry Von Erich was going to go back to his dad's promotion and make a lot of money. They should have just. Went with it. I mean, they referred to him as Kerry Von Erich more often than some of the people that they gave different names to. But
that's true. Yeah, like earlier in 91 when the Dragon came back.
Yeah. It's just terrible.
Oh, Lord. Greg the Hammer Valentine running to the ring.
Wow.
Well, and he and Ric Flair again with a tremendous amount of history as a tag team and as a competitor, so.
Yeah, NWA Tag Team Champions in, was it the early 80s or was it the late
70s? I was going to say 79, but I don't know exactly, but it would have been in that 79-80 era, I think.
Yep.
And they're chopping the hell out of each other right here.
What's up with Valentine wearing mirror image Hogan gear?
Yeah, really.
True, he's got the red and yellow.
He is, and Von Erich is too, other than the white tights with the yellow and red lettering logo on them. This is turning into an Art of Wrestling Royal Rumble edition.
Yeah, I guess so.
Repo Man with the tire treads.
Well, I think we'll have a good bit of time talking about the we'll save it till the end. But there's a lot of interesting psychology that takes place in the way this match is booked. And
I don't
know exactly where they were going with it, but we'll get to that later.
Sure, yeah.
Well, all I know is that right now it doesn't look too good for your boy Flair here. Everybody's going after him.
Well, that's right. And he's had to continue to fight people off. And he and Greg Valentine right now are really battling it out in the corner. And, again, sometimes WWF will do this. I mean, if you'll get one of their pay-per-views and you'll be like, damn, I really got more than my money's worth of this. I mean, they really picked up on a lot of little nice, subtle – great back kick to Repo Man. Wow, that was beautiful.
Yes.
Hilarious.
I mean, Ric Flair, he doesn't have the most offensive moves in the world, but what he does better than anyone. So there was one of them right there.
He's got stuff to do.
That's right.
Yeah, got to get his shit in. The 10-second countdown.
Nikolai Volkov. Okay, we said we weren't going to talk about him, I think, earlier. So.
Yeah, who did he replace in this one? He wasn't the replacement for Marty Jannetty, was he?
I don't know if
there was
a specific replacement.
He has his he's the friendly Russian now with his double flags on his tights there. And
him and Haku were the replacements.
Him and Haku, that's right. And I'm
who
and
else
one
missed
of them
this?
Replaced – one of them replaced Brian Knobbs, and one of them replaced Marty Jannetty. So we'll just play whichever. And this was later on after...
Oh, I called the wrong nasty boy the wrong name earlier. Well, sorry.
Nah, that's all right. Nikolai decided to embrace the United States in summer of 90. And then he kind of disappeared for a while, and I'm pretty sure he got roundly booed on his way down to the ring here. I think people forgot that he was a United States...
Superstars, how it happened. He and Boris were not getting along, and Boris came out and sang the Russian national anthem, and then he came out and sang the American national anthem.
Oh, my God, and that's all it
that's
does,
That's the
huh?
worst. That's terrible. Oh, and here comes Greg Valentine with a figure four on Ric Flair.
Yep.
All right.
Proud.
And Gorilla Monsoon's quite excited about it, so that's good for him.
Orgasm.
Yep. Oh, there goes. There goes
Nikolai Volkov.
Nice paycheck there, Nikolai.
And, I mean, you want to talk about the most petty signing of any wrestler ever, I would have to say Boris Zukov was near the top of the list. Let's just screw the AWA a little bit.
Yeah,
he's a
let's
tag
completely
team champion.
Clean house.
And then we're going to job him out in 30 seconds with Nikolai Volkov everywhere they wrestle.
Yep, exactly. Who else did they take at that time? Akio Sato and plugged him into the I guess was Tanaka there too? They might have taken them both and put them together as the Orient Express.
Well, that would have been later. Those guys pretty well had their run at with Bad Company before they took them, I think. But I could be wrong on that.
Well,
but I mean,
the
Orient Express
was definitely around in March of '90 because they beat the Rockers at WrestleMania by countout.
Well, yeah, no, I mean that's.
And by then, AWA was all but dead anyway.
Well, Destruction Crew was fun to watch. But, yeah, that was the...
Yeah.
And Greg Valentine's been eliminated. The Big Boss Man is in the ring.
Yeah.
Who, again, you know, I that was a pretty good WWF character. I liked him better as Big Bubba. But
let me... 1 second here to point something out. Boss Man went after about five or six guys when he came in. Obviously, they used that to call spots.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And he just eliminated the Repo Man, so there you go, Big Boss Man. So
there you go, taking the law into his own hands. Yeah, it's time for – somebody's got a clean house at this point. WWF's never really been a fan of having a lot of guys in the ring, and it was starting to fill up. But, I mean,
well,
guys,
it's
take
tough
a look
to maintain
at the guys
focus. I mean, there's a reason this is better than a typical battle royal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Take a look at the guys that are in the ring right now, though, just for historical context. Flair and Davey Boy, Tito Santana, the Boss Man, Barbarian, I guess, for what he's worth, when he wasn't teaming with Shaska Watley. I'm sure he was making waves everywhere. Texas Tornado. I mean, even right now, it's a who's who.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And finally, David Boy Smith is out. I think
he was in
pretty
for
impressive.
About 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I give him credit. And there goes Kerry Von Erich also.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a good Royal Rumble. I mean, as far as performance there, if you watch what Davey Boy did, I mean, he was very good. So
he was, yeah. He was a hot character at this time. There's a reason they gave him the Intercontinental Belt in London 8 months later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two guys eliminate each other at once. Tito and Shawn Michaels go over. You can tell they're trying to get to. They've got a story to tell, and you can tell they're trying to really fast forward to the point where they can get to the crux of the story. So. Here's jacked up Hercules running.
Yeah,
and
I don't think Hercules is a big part of the story. I don't remember how long he lasts, but this is not,
no time at all.
This is not his peak. Again, and I watched him in World Class with Billy Jack Haynes. They had a little thing going back when I was watching. So
about what?
Ric Flair. He turns on. Haku there, is that?
And then he gets in everybody's way.
Well, he's scared. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And typical, I mean, I love Ric Flair to death, but there's, you know, the spot that he loves to call, the beg off, the Irish whip, and the military press.
Yes.
in the meantime, let the big lug Hercules. There's a guy who had nothing going on. He was done with his Power and Glory run, and he was basically jobbing and opening matches at house shows.
Yeah.
Kind of came out
he
of nowhere.
He still got the Power outfit on.
Yeah.
He does.
And he's out, and the Big Boss Man is not out. Ric Flair thought he was out, and he's not.
You could tell that was kind of a blown spot there.
Well, the Boss Man's about to hang himself on the bottom rope here in a second.
And the poke to the eye, that's another signature spot that's very good. So,
but again, I don't know if I'd gotten to this point. Boss Man was a hot character at this time.
Well,
I said that about Bulldog, but Boss Man was too. He came off that jailhouse match in the feud with the Mountie in 91. And I mean, he was just a beloved character.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Ooh, and there he goes.
Of course,
and then
Bobby Hinton's giving the title right now.
Yep.
Thanks.
That's great. Last guy in the... Takes the nosedive. That's classic Flair.
Yeah, that's the best. This is the best. He gets a nice 10 seconds to rest here and get ready for his next challenge. So
Hopefully somebody easy comes
Yeah,
up.
You would hope. Somehow I'm not certain that's going to be the case.
And the crowd goes apeshit. Here's the storytelling. So these two obviously have history.
Oh, yeah.
And then when Flair comes to the WWF, he immediately starts going after Roddy Piper at the announce booth. So start the feud there, along with his feud with Hulk Hogan. Roddy Piper, earlier on in the show, wins his first ever WWF championship of any sort, wins the Intercontinental title as a stand-in for Bret Hart.
Yeah.
And so the story here,
now
Roddy
that
Piper...
that match I've seen and enjoyed.
Yeah. Yep. And the story here
and
being
once
that
again,
Roddy Piper, you know, could he could win. He won his first belt, and he could possibly walk away with two championships tonight. And now he's got easy pickings, Ric Flair, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and, you know, I mean, this was one of those things that they were very good at picking up on. When he came in, and Ric Flair was either wrestling Roddy Piper or Hulk Hogan. And, you know, I wasn't in Mid-Atlantic at that time, so I didn't really know the history of Ric Flair and Roddy Piper. But I could see where, for some people, that would be a huge deal to see that. And I don't remember what release I've seen a Ric Flair Roddy Piper Madison Square Garden match on, which is just fantastic. I think it's on one of these Ric Flair DVDs, actually.
I'll have to go back through and look. Oh, here's one half of the washer and dryer, Dusty.
Yep. I think the only half that they would ever use, but anyway.
Yeah. The sleeper hold, which, of course, isn't going to put anybody over the top rope, but it worked earlier. That's how Piper won the Intercontinental title.
This is a well-booked match. I mean, there's a lot here to like. There's no question. And you just hope for Ric Flair's sake somebody's coming down to help him here as they count down.
Flair's calling a spot there.
Yep. By the way, earlier in the match, I forgot to point out, you could hear Hoskins talking. That was kind of a... But
could you make out what he said?
No, but you could tell he was obviously talking.
Jake, the classic snake here.
Well, he waits for Roddy Piper to turn his back, which probably wasn't the smartest thing for Roddy Piper.
Yeah, never turn your back on anyone.
And these are some of the best punches in wrestling ever. Those short punches from a guy who doesn't really have big arms, but he can really throw a punch that looks credible.
Yep.
This was starting to be the point where Savage's punches were terrible.
Yeah.
Lunging at you, you know?
Yep.
It's terrible. Oh, we got a friendship here.
Short arm clothesline. I mean,
and people, I think, deep down still wanted to love Jake the Snake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had a magnetic personality, no question.
Mm.
Well, look, here, he's going after Flair, and they're all cheering him. So
yeah.
Obviously
yeah.
There's still a connection.
Yeah, and playing to the crowd, doing the odd finger twist.
Yep.
Well, you know, this was talked about a lot with Jerry Lawler and all the little things he did to build excitement about the match with The Miz. I mean, Jake Roberts did a lot of those things and did them very well. just to build anticipation for the DDT or for, you know, whatever he was, wherever he was going in a match.
No, speaking of what, me watching Superstars 1990 episodes, there was a Jake Roberts squash match, and there was an interesting conversation between McMahon and Jesse Ventura about, well, they were trying to disguise it as Jake is a good guy so Jesse doesn't like him, but it was really about charisma versus psychology, so that was kind of interesting.
Cool.
And Jesse said he didn't put much weight into psychology, but Jake sure as hell did.
Yeah.
Cool.
And who's regarded as the better in-ring worker, Jesse Ventura or Jake Nick Roberts?
Yeah.
Hacksaw Duggan out here.
And, you know, Hacksaw Duggan got an occasional shot at Ric Flair back in Mid-South.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Hacksaw Duggan is really, like, I love the Freebirds and they watch the Von Erichs, but it sounds ridiculous now, but Hacksaw Duggan was my favorite wrestler for the longest time.
Really?
Before he went to the WWF.
Well, he was a real cartoon character.
Angle.
Oh, no, he was never a cartoon character in Mid-South, and he worked a hell of a lot better. I mean, when he was feuding with Terry Gordy and he was feuding with the One Man Gang, I mean, he was outstanding. And he gave great interviews, too. I mean, you know, then he became a cartoon like a lot of these guys did in WWF. But I remember being so disappointed when he went to WWF, and I saw that tape of the WrestleMania where he was upset with the Sheik and Volkoff or whatever at WrestleMania 3, I guess, when he came in. But it was just like immediately he became not what he was. I mean, he was, you know, I don't know. He was he did the patriotic thing in a good way that was exciting, and man, he delivered in the ring when he was. And of course, he was fighting, you know, Skandar Akbar and his guys too. So there was all that.
Well, and he was a bit player in the WWF. I mean, he's a beloved character, but really, he was a bit player. And he
got
to team up with Hogan every once in a while, but that was the paycheck that he collected.
I don't know about that, because he was on Hogan's team at Survivor Series, so he was always good enough, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he was always in that second tier, you know, he was, you know, and he had good feuds, and there were televised feuds that culminated with big blow-off matches, and, you know, against Randy Savage, and he was the king, so, you know, it's not exactly when the kingship meant anything, but, you know.
Well, it's not about like what the minor titles mean today. I mean, unfortunately.
Yep.
But yeah, it was a different, I mean, when he, and you know, one of the first episode of Mid-South Wrestling I ever watched was when he won the North American title from Dick Slater, but he beat Buzz Sawyer for it. And Bill Watts changed the contract and made Buzz Sawyer defend Dick Slater's title for him. And, you know, his response was as good as Rick Steiner won the TV title at Starrcade 88. I mean, it was like, you were so excited to see Hacksaw Duggan finally win the North American title. It was it was a big deal. And, of course, Jake Roberts was great in Mid-South, too. I mean.
Oh, yeah. I see a pattern here of WWF taking these top guys from Mid-South and making them, like, upper mid-card players.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jake the Junkyard Dog.
And now, Junkyard Dog is before my time in Mid-South. But, you know, when you talk to people that saw him in his prime, it was just depressing to see the, you know, cartoon he was in WWF. And
yeah.
Well, and how ungodly out of shape he became, too.
Well, and there was some things there. I mean, I don't know if you consider some of the things they did with him racist or not, but for all the criticism Bill Watts got, he was a legitimate, you know, character in Mid-South that was worth admiring. You know, there was no cartoon to it. He was just a badass, stand-up guy. And, you know, then he became kind of a caricature, as a lot of them did in WWF.
Yeah.
It's almost like Watts wasn't actually racist, but we can't say that, can we?
Well, I would. I mean, I would. But I know you're being sarcastic, but I mean, everybody has their
shot
fault.
At Wade, if you want me to spell it out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they've butchered him in a bad way in that publication. And
here's a guy who became a caricature of himself, complete parody.
Yeah.
Totally coked himself out of any potential drawing power.
Yeah, he sure did.
And another guy with serious history with Ric Flair from Mid-Atlantic, though, as long as we're bringing that up.
From back in the day when
he
could talk.
Yep. Right at it.
Love it.
Yep.
And they asked Bruce Mitchell in the audio about the about the Jimmy Superfly Snuka Magnificent Morocco cage match where he jumped off the top of the cage. And I've never been so upset to be like Dusty and not have cable TV.
Yeah.
Because all my friends that had cable TV, that's all they could talk about at school was Jimmy Snuka going off the top of the cage against Magnificent Morocco. And
yeah.
Everybody was watching. And I'm like, well, what channel was that on? They're like, USA. And I didn't even, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, my parents are not going to let me go to somebody's house on a Tuesday night to watch Jimmy Snuka.
Right.
It just wasn't going to happen. So I was just screwed. And I don't even think people had VCRs hardly at that point. So there was nothing. Just bringing back bad memories there. Sorry.
That's funny.
Claire and
Piper recall
continuing to just chop the hell out of each other, which
that's
is
right.
entertaining as all hell to watch.
What a duo that would have been to ride with back in the 80s.
Oh, dear Lord. I wouldn't have
travel
survived.
Those
but,
yeah.
You know, some people are stronger at those type of things than me.
I think IRS is another guy's weird point of discussion, but I was looking at the results of this and the time that everybody was in the ring earlier today on ProWrestlingHistory.com, and I think IRS was in this match for 27 minutes.
No.
I believe was the longest other than Flair for this match.
Huh.
Interesting.
But he's not really standing out in any way at this point.
No. He's completely
yeah.
in the background the whole time.
Yeah.
He's basically just somebody to be beaten up when they don't want to go beat up Ric Flair.
Here comes The Undertaker. So here we go.
Yep.
Kind of lousy luck because this is the lowest number he could have drawn.
Oh.
That's right.
Yeah, that's not fortunate.
And the smart thing, again, let's go back to Pat Patterson for a second. You know that was on purpose.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So, again, there's a guy who could tell a story. He could stretch it out, you know. Some of Pat Patterson's best angles took 9 months to wind up.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed
no,
to
and you just,
on today.
I mean, again, we're actually recording this during Raw, which kind of shows our level of interest.
I could give two scoops that I'm missing Raw.
You know, it's so bad what they did with that Cena-Barrett thing. It's just so bad.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they had a decent thing going, and it was like Vince Russo was booking it. It's like they burned through the whole thing in one night.
Yep.
And it's just like,
and
damn.
And how many times can Cena beat Barrett, you know?
Barrett
no, I mean, who
almost
cares? It's like if there's no
yeah.
consequences to anything, nothing matters. And that's what I mean, you know Vince Russo doesn't understand that, but you'd think Vince McMahon did.
Right.
I mean, it's just, oh, it's pathetic.
Wade Barrett has almost zero credibility at this point now. I mean, the next thing he can do and possibly, you know, show any signs of life with is a feud with David Otunga. Who gives a shit?
No, it's bad. I mean, it's bad. It's just like if, I don't know. I don't think you always have to book backwards. I mean, if they're going somewhere for WrestleMania, that's great, but
yep.
You've got to let things organically happen and just see where you're at to some degree. I mean, you need to know who the Undertaker's going to be with against WrestleMania, but
right.
I don't know. That's anyway. I'm not watching it very much, but I happen to see a little bit of that. I mean, the Jerry Lawler stuff got me excited again.
Oh yeah,
that was so great, and I was so happy. I happened to be watching.
And when it takes a 61-year-old man to get you excited.
No, but he was so, I mean, yeah. But it was the best thing I'd seen on there for I don't know how long.
It was.
I mean, he can outwork all but like three or four of the people on the roster. So.
Yeah.
I love that Randy Savage just sprinted down to the ring and absolutely.
He didn't do very well.
Jake the Snake just like slumps down, rolls out of the ring, patiently
mm-hmm.
waits for Undertaker to grab a hold of Randy Savage. Let's put a few more things in the context, even though I know everybody remembers this stuff. So, leading up to this show, Hulk Hogan was the world champion, lost the belt to The Undertaker at Survivor Series 91 in a fashion that a lot of wrestlers these days get that kind of short initial title reign in their first rookie year or so.
Right.
6 days later, this Tuesday in Texas, Hulk Hogan wins the belt back with some shenanigans involving Ric Flair. Jack Tunney doesn't see what happens, blah, blah, blah. Title's vacated. So, you know, of all the multiple sub-stories we have going on here, that's the reason the Royal Rumble's for the vacated world title. At the same time, you've got Jake the Snake Roberts and The Undertaker finding a partnership here.
Yep.
In the meantime,
yeah.
Roberts feuding with Savage. So, and then we just saw what happened there, which we alluded to earlier. Randy Savage jumps over the top rope in order to attack Jake the Snake Roberts.
Well, I mean, fair enough. He eliminated himself. I don't have a real problem with that.
Yeah.
Or they said that didn't count. Is that?
The official ruling
was that he's still in the match.
Yeah, no one threw him over the top rope, which apparently is one of the rules. You have to be thrown over.
Okay, well, then I think in any other sport, when DeSean Jackson fumbles a ball because he's dicking around and runs in the end zone and doesn't have it, it doesn't count for a touchdown. If you jump over the top rope, you should be out.
That's right. How many times has Farouk eliminated himself and he ended up being out of the Royal Rumble? Mil Mascaris took a dive. I'm telling you, there's two guys right there. Are they all alive? Wait a minute.
Don't get me wrong. I love the announcing for this show, but the fact that the announcers were confused, I hate when the announcers are confused about a ruling on anything. They need to know, you know, so they can be the word of authority on this.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes the announcers need to ask the questions that the audience is asking.
Yeah,
and then you're like, oh, well, I guess he's still in there. I'm going to agree and disagree on that.
It would lead me to believe that it was an accident on Randy Savage's part.
Yeah, it could be. But, I mean, the whole thing kind of makes sense, at least. I mean, he's so mad, he's jumping over the top rope, and maybe he should have been out. I don't have a big problem with it myself. I think it should be an exception, not a rule.
Scarface-level cocaine before the show, so. A little amped up.
Yeah. Oh, what do we have here?
Oh, hello.
Whoops.
Oh, Undertaker. Hey, he tried to lift the Undertaker.
He just tried to lift the Undertaker. That's right.
Oh, the Berserker. And what's his move? Pick him up and throw him out.
No, that's true. Nord the Barbarian. I mean.
Yeah,
hey,
John Nord.
He had his moment where you know, I
you
thought he might. I mean, this is Bruiser Brody imitation. To the degree, but at one point I thought he might go somewhere.
Well, about a year and 4 months later, he went to Fort Dodge, Iowa to wrestle in the high school gym against Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Now, there you go. I assume you were at that match.
I certainly was.
Wow, okay.
Sitting ringside.
I can't say I've ever seen John Nord wrestle.
Oh, well. It was interesting. He and Nails. So the other main event was Road Warrior Hawk versus Nails. This was, again, spring of 93. This is when Hawk was kind of on his independent tour.
Before he was in ECW and all that,
And so Nails and John Nord, both, I'm sure, friends from Minneapolis, Kevin Kelly or Kevin Wachels or Wachels or however you pronounce it, and John Nord probably traveling together, walked in the door where we were all standing around waiting for tickets to get in, and we see Kevin Kelly and started chanting Boss Man, Boss Man, and I hear in that distinctive Kevin Kelly voice, definitely not the Nail Boss Man voice, but the Kevin Kelly voice, I think we walked in the wrong door.
You know, I never understood why when he went to WWF, like they had him, he's like one of the few people they told, I assume, to get off steroids. You watch him in those AWA clips, and he's so jacked up.
Yep.
And then he goes to WWF, and he's, you know, in that prison outfit and not looking terribly impressive.
He had 100 pounds of clothing on.
And it just didn't ever make sense to me. It's so opposite of what Vince McMahon always did with these people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when Vince has a vision and
yeah,
the
I guess
ability
so.
To find a paycheck.
I just...
Oh, Virgil. There's another guy with, I don't know, he's in his waning days of WWE and or WWF.
I was never a fan.
He'd hang on for a few years doing absolutely nothing.
Then he got paid by WCW, which is amazing.
Yeah, to be Vince.
I mean, just to tell a joke. I mean, they could have done that for 1 week and paid him $5,000, but no, they kept him on the payroll for quite a long time. Not the most flattering view of Hacksaw Duggan there, but I assume that's, that's right.
A point about the Berserker, he was wrestling the same style back in 87, so I don't know what took McMahon so long to sign him, you know?
Yeah.
But
I don't
know. Didn't improve at all in any way from 87 to 92, so.
No, he didn't. But maybe they finally came up with the gimmick, I guess. I don't
know.
The
Nordic Viking, yeah. I don't know. I never saw the appeal in the guy. I'm glad he only lasted as long as he did. No offense to John Nord, but I don't get it. I didn't get it then. I don't get it now. You know, he's flexible enough to give somebody a big boot, I guess.
And then a running big boot. And then other boots.
Now, in the interviews, I mean, I watch all that dying AWA stuff, and the interviews they were doing were...
I went to the North Woods!
Old Rivers,
Jesus Christ.
Who smelled like old whiskey and he needed a shave. And he told me there were three kinds of people in this world, and I can't remember what the three kinds were, because who cares?
It doesn't matter. There are three kinds of people. Old, smell like old whiskey, and and need an old shave.
All right, here we go.
So here we go. So Colonel Mustafa, that they refuse to acknowledge, is the Iron Sheik.
Yeah.
A guy who 8 years earlier was the WWF champion, a transitional champion at that, but a WWF champion, comes in as a tertiary character for the Sergeant Slaughter Iraqi sympathizer gimmick.
Yeah.
Really makes no waves. He's part of that terrible Survivor Series match.
Oh, God.
He's just at a point where he could play a character that really didn't need to be played.
Yeah.
Kind of just dog and ponying the Sergeant Slaughter gimmick. It's kind of like how they bring Tony Atlas back today, you know. I remember that guy. Maybe we can float him a 6 months worth of paychecks.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, I assume since Vern Gagne offered him $100,000 to break Hulk Hogan's leg and he turned it down, that they kept him on the payroll a little longer when they
sure.
felt like they could.
Sure, yeah.
Now, the classic Jim Cornette story from, like,
when
89.
I was going to say, when was it that his contract turned over in WCW? Would that have been
– it expired in 89, and then they had to keep him through 90.
Because they forgot. Yeah.
Yep.
No, that's a great – I mean, and yet they were all upset about Bobby Eaton paying him anything.
Right. Yeah, they were sure to knock on his door when his contract came due, because God forbid we pay a good worker.
Yeah. So. No, I greatly enjoy that scrapbook. I've read it quite a few times.
I think they did the same with Missy Hyatt, if I'm not mistaken. They forgot about her, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Dan, you mentioned earlier the Great American Bash 91. I want to correct you a little bit. The last match on the card was Rick Steiner and Missy Hyatt, right? Against.
That's right.
And who was it, Dick Murdoch or was it Dick Slater? Or was it either? No, it was Arn Anderson, because the Hardliners grabbed Missy, and I don't remember exactly what happened. It was whatever.
Well, I didn't get the pay per view. I mean, don't get me wrong. I recall how
Arn
bad
Anderson
it was. I bought the. I mean, even the After magazines, they acknowledged that the crowd was not happy with it.
Yeah,
and
it was terrible. When Stunning Steve Austin is part of a scaffold match with PN News, you know there's some terrible guidance in that company.
So, and that's another thing Jim Cornette refers to. PN News, apparently his dad was buddies with Jack Hurd or Jim or Petrick or one of those guys. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, Petrick, yeah.
Yeah, I never quite figured that out. And I will say that we're talking about the After Mags. I did not get the Torch or anything at this point, or the Observer or any of those. But I was so excited to get my wrestler or whichever one it was, Inside Wrestling. They did a really nice job of putting all the information you now looked up online today on pro wrestling histories about how long Ric Flair was in the match, how many people each guy eliminated. That was always really cool. They would do a nice job with that. I mean, they would treat it like a sport, obviously. So the Royal Rumble was right up their alley because they could give all these stats and facts, and it didn't, it didn't take away from what they were writing elsewhere in the magazine. And people that liked wrestling were interested in that. So it was always one of the best.
It might have even played into what they were writing in the magazine, not in like a storyline way, but you know, keep promoting Ric Flair as the 60-minute man sort of thing, and here.
Oh yeah, no, and it was very sports-like the way they wrote it, which is what their goal was all the time. I mean, I still remember when Peter King, wrote, I think it was Peter King or Stu Sachs, wrote the thing about 2020 saying wrestling was fake, and
Yeah.
And it was brilliant writing. And, of course, they did show Dick Murdoch's punches, which were great in that 2020. And he's like, yeah, Dick Murdoch hit him right in the face. And here comes Hulk Hogan. We should probably at least mention that.
I was looking through the ring real quick, and I was noticing, okay, here's one guy Hogan's going to throw out. Here's another guy. Like,
yeah, it's a full ring right now, right? So it gives Hulk Hogan Superman time.
Exactly. Again, the brilliant.
And again, I was convinced as a fan. I was like, Hulk Hogan's going to throw Ric Flair out, and I'm never giving these motherfuckers another dime ever. Ever. I was so mad. I was just like, oh, this is the worst. And I just jumped up and down and screamed and was so excited when other things happened.
Yep.
Get there.
I definitely marked out watching this match. There's without question.
Just notice Sid still hasn't come to the ring. He got a great number.
So yeah, he did, which is also smart fucking. And Rick Martel, who did at least have one match with Ric Flair when he was AWA champion and Flair was NWA champion, is in there also.
Yeah. One of those old-timey unification matches that never went anywhere. Usually
yeah,
a double
count-out
or a double disqualification.
Mm-hmm.
Undertaker went out. That's Hogan's first elimination, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and Undertaker did the great roll of the eyes there. I mean, that's not easy to do. So.
Yeah. Now, I would like to get a stopwatch on how long Hulk Hogan's T-shirt ends up around Erwin R. Scheister's neck. Because I'm pretty sure he wears that thing like a scarf for about 3 minutes during this match.
And
that could be like a fashion statement. Gay people
wear
scarves, you know.
Now, there was a chance for Bobby Heenan to talk about how, you know, Hulk Hogan's a big cheater. He used his, shirt illegally there.
Yeah. And Hogan,
so he should be disqualified.
Exactly. That's where I was going with that.
Yeah.
You can tell Hogan had been out making movies, too, because he was nowhere near as jacked up here as he was even a year ago.
Yeah.
Hogan was starting to cycle down, I think. Oh, here's Steve Kern, Skinner.
Yep.
That I'm sure had some sort of interaction with Flair at some point in his life.
Oh, I'm sure he got a title shot at some point in Florida. I mean, he was, you know. I mean, mainly it was him and Stan Lane, but I would still think he was pretty over there. And I know he's coming to the end of his career, but I never understood why, you know, go out of your way to make somebody just disgusting, but whatever. I mean, he wasn't going to make a lot of money in WWF anyway, so.
No.
My favorite Steve Kern story comes from Stan Lane's RF video shoot, where Lane and Kern were taking on the Road Warriors, and the Road Warriors were just about to leave the territory, so they were booked to lose, but they didn't want to, of course. So, well, you know, Lane is looking at the Road Warriors while Kern is playing to the crowd, and Hawk goes to him and is like, "We ain't doing the finish. You know, listen to me and you won't get hurt." And Lane was like, "Alrighty then." But Kern didn't hear him, like legitimately didn't hear him, so he goes, "What?" But Hawk thought that was like a, "What, are you shitting me?"
Yeah.
So
they
proceeded to beat the living fuck out of Steve Kern in that match.
God.
You know, what's interesting is Cornette talks about how the Road Warriors insisted that they would lose to the Stan Lane, Bobby Eaton, Midnight Express because – I mean, granted, they'd sold for him so well for so long, but you wonder. I mean, they were more mature, I guess. But boy, yeah, you've seen a lot about how they just would make life hell for the Fabulous Ones.
Yeah.
Maybe trying to make life hell for everybody the whole time they're in the AWA.
Yeah, and you know what? I did not get AWA then, but I wanted to see. I mean, it was cool being a fan during the news. After Mag era, because I'd be like, holy shit, what if I could go to Memphis and watch Jerry Lawler? Holy shit, what if I could see the Road Warriors? I mean, it was just all these different things. I mean, I was a kid, but still.
Oh,
Sergeant Slaughter.
Everybody's favorite American.
Yeah, I was just like, you know, they almost should have given up when he was. I mean, it's tough to come back from that and be a good guy. I mean, I guess there was no other thing they could do. But
now, what kind of history did Flair have with Sergeant Slaughter? They were both in Mid-Atlantic in the early 80s, I think.
Yeah,
late
70s, early 80s. I mean, but
well,
again,
I mean, their history goes all the way back to Minneapolis. I mean, they're both from Vern Gagne's camp. I don't remember. I don't think they're from the same year, but they definitely both went through Vern Gagne's training camp and spent their time in the AWA. And
yeah, this would be almost one where you'd need a real Mid-Atlantic expert. I mean, the stuff I've seen from Sergeant Slaughter is the stuff Bruce Mitchell put up in his own, that Kernodal Slaughter Steamboat Youngblood stuff, which is worth watching each and every chapter of if you haven't done that on
yeah.
YouTube. But I really don't know much about it. I mean, I know they did wrestle on occasion, but I don't know a whole lot about their history.
Interesting to note, Hogan and Piper were going at it for a while, both babyfaces here, but obviously they headlined the first WrestleMania
yep.
against each other.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I still appreciate, I wish I could remember the show. I think it was Royal Rumble 91. There was definitely a show where Roddy Piper was on commentary and just ragging on Hogan almost the whole time. And it would have been Gorilla probably on commentary, or if it was a different show, maybe McMahon said something about
mm-hmm.
there's only one Hulk Hogan, and Piper says, yeah, thank God for that.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Roddy Piper's a smart guy. He's always going to be consistent with his character. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's the key, because you never know when down the road you're going to end up with that guy in another feud. So.
Yeah, I mean, you can't – you need to know your character, and that's why CM Punk's doing a good job as an announcer.
Yeah.
But everything he says makes some sense, and here comes Sid Vicious. Sid
oh, right.
Here. So is he number 30 or 29? I forget.
I think he's 29.
That was 29.
Warlord left.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the worst.
Warlord always got a high number.
And you know what? And we were talking, Barbarian was in there earlier, and I might have misidentified him, too. I don't recall. But that weightlifting challenge that the Warlord and the Barbarian did was at least the best angle they ever did against the Road Warriors.
The Road
I mean, they
Warriors,
left the
yeah.
NWA shortly thereafter and were hot in WWF yeah. for a couple months, but I really wanted to see that match after, you know, I was really pissed when they attacked the Road Warriors like that.
And the closest thing you got was Powers of Pain versus Demolition in the WWF.
Yeah, which, yeah, I mean, the two Road Warrior ripoff teams, which
yep.
was just like, whatever.
Couple of second-rate imposters. I need to get their butts kicked.
And their teeth kicked down their throat.
You guys definitely know more WWF
no,
pay-per-view interviews and other things
than
I do.
Yeah, I've got a special place in my memory for this dumb shit.
Yeah.
And at least Hulk Hogan's giving Ric Flair a little bit of offense here. And here comes Sid.
Here comes Sid, so goodbye Flair, basically.
The worst punches. Oh, he's not going to throw a punch here.
Thank
Sid
God.
Had to have had the worst punches in wrestling history.
No, it was bad.
Of
him
a main eventer. Luger, he and Luger, they both look like, I still think the most, or the best and most appropriate comparison.
But the thing I'll say about Lex Luger
they
is,
look like, they look like a cat trying to bat a ball of yarn.
I've never seen a Sid, well, that's a nice kip up, though. Oh, hello. That was pretty impressive.
Nice.
But the one thing I've never seen from Sid is the type of match I saw Lex Luger against Ric Flair or Lex Luger against Brian Pillman. It's not like Lex Luger never had any good matches.
He did. He definitely did.
I mean, that match was that same clash we were talking about, that Flair Pillman match on that that last clash of 89 was
uh-oh.
Ridiculously good. I mean, that whole card was just incredible.
Oh,
was that
the
card where the Midnight Express Cornette turned on the Dynamic Dudes, or was that a different one?
Not
I think
sure.
that was the same card. I'd have to look it up in my book, but
maybe.
It turned him perpetually babyface in that area.
Oh, God. I mean, it was. I mean, that was just so great.
Let's see. How long does the Warlord last? Well, Hogan's out of the ring, so he's going to last longer than 2 seconds.
Warlord's
the
taking
Warlord,
his time getting to the ring.
That's right. Dusty, you and I have talked about the Warlord multiple times. What could, should have changed or could have changed about the Warlord, and how far could he have made it in pro wrestling, honestly?
I don't know. I've always been kind of a closet Warlord fan. Obviously, going back to the superstars, I just watched
Whoa.
Where Fuji
oh.
broke quick.
That was the classic Sergeant Slaughter bump times like.
Oh, give Sergeant Slaughter some credit for that. Damn, I mean, he made Sid Vicious look like $1 million.
Yeah, he really did. That was amazing. You know, it was weird when they sold him to Slick and then he debuted the new Phantom of the Opera look. They never gave him entrance music.
Right.
And oftentimes, if he was on a pay-per-view, he'd be in the corner to my left guy, you know?
Yeah, yeah, good point. He did that with Tito at SummerSlam 90. They did that with the six-man tag at SummerSlam 91. The Power and Glory didn't have theme music either.
Yeah, they really, like, de-emphasize Slick's guys.
Now, this is why you shouldn't wear a tie in the match. I like that they're doing this, but, you know.
He's got him by the tongue.
That's his tie.
Oh.
Hey, Dan, did your dad ever wear a tie when you were a kid?
No, not really. He taught high school and wasn't a real dress-up guy. I mean, I had a wedding or something maybe, but not very often.
Hey, Dusty, did your dad – well, you would know your dad was never home when you got there.
Can I just say that ties are like the stupidest thing ever?
I wore a tie the Warlord was about 2 minutes. I wore a tie the first day of class every semester because it's a celebration. That's right. And I believe that. It's like we're starting fresh, whatever. I don't think it makes a much better impression, but it's a big deal. It's a new day, so I'm going to celebrate by wearing a tie.
Yep. Dressed to impress. Now, Sid just dumps out two legends of the sport, Roddy Piper and Rick Martel.
Yeah.
Fashion model Rick Martel.
The fashion model, yeah. Thanks, Gene Okerlund.
So would you have done anything different for the Final Four? Would you have Piper instead of Savage? I don't know where else you'd go. Undertaker would have been a possibility here. Who else should have been in the Final Four that wasn't? Or is this the right Final Four?
I think it's the right Final Four. I think they absolutely got it right. You can argue semantics here as Savage goes.
Yeah.
Yep. I think having Undertaker in a Final Four here would be the equivalent of if you had a Royal Rumble right now and your choices for Final Four came down to, let's say, Cena and Orton, Hunter, let's say Undertaker and Sheamus, and you left Sheamus in there.
Yeah.
You know, it would just be kind of weird, like, when those are your other choices.
Yeah.
But I think this is the right choice.
Here we go.
And there he goes. Goodbye, Hulk Hogan.
Yes! And look at the crowd.
I was like, even if Sid wins, it's not that bad. This son of a bitch is out.
Big boy.
What did he say? What did he say? I forgot what he said. He's like.
He said, it's every man for himself, big boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Hogan has
Hulk
no
Hogan
faith.
Is a bitch. I mean, this is the worst. I mean,
look,
Sid Vicious, I don't know how he constantly got him. And there, okay, come on, Rick, knock him out.
And the
That's
crowd,
the best.
Look at the crowd. You can see them, their arms are in the air, they're waving, look, clapping, screaming.
Oh, people are fire, yeah. And Bobby Heenan's about ready to have a seizure. But Sid Vicious is right, and Hulk Hogan is wrong. How Sid Vicious got himself booked this way, how he kicked out of Hulk Hogan's leg drop at WrestleMania, he always got the best of Hulk Hogan.
No, think about this, though. Sid was a babyface at this time. Hulk cheated to eliminate him and helped Ric Flair, who was a heel.
No, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's every man for himself, big boy. That's exactly right. I mean,
how are we not
Sid Vicious should have been the babyface.
It just makes Hogan look like an idiot, which is bad. That's bad booking. That's one fault of this whole thing.
But I don't see how – I mean, Hulk Hogan never let himself look bad. I don't know whether he was planning on leaving and he thought Sid Vicious was the next, and I guess we're cutting off here.
Yeah,
but
I don't know. He must have talked himself into thinking that was a good idea, thinking that he was going to get some sort of sympathy for having his back turned and Sid was going to get this smirk on his face. And
I mean, Sid Vicious, he called it. I'd forgotten when he – yeah, it's every man for himself, big boy. He says it right to him. And it's like, you're damn right it was. I'm like, everything you did was justified. And
like Hogan wasn't trying to eliminate him 5 seconds
ago. Right. No, that's the – I mean, the entire thing is just like, wow, Hulk Hogan's booked to look bad in that.
Yeah, and how pathetic does Hogan look? The look on his face when he's trying to pull Sid, like, repeatedly yank his arm to try to get him to go over the top rope.
Well, yeah, Sid doesn't really sell it that well. Like, it's really that – I mean, it puts him off balance and enough for Ric Flair to get him out. But, yeah, it's
– right.
I mean, no, I mean, Hulk Hogan does not, and which I was great with, but I was just like, wow, I mean, this is just so, Hulk Hogan's always made sure that he makes himself look so strong in every match, and here at the end of this, he looks terrible.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, any mark, I mean, I who's going to watch that and say Hulk Hogan was admirable? Now, they had the main event between this and WrestleMania, and what, did Sid abandon him in the tag match? I forget, but, you know.
Yeah, and he punched Brutus the Barber Beefcake with a rearranged his face.
Yeah, I mean, they made him out to be the bad guy. But then this is the WrestleMania where Sid kicks out of the leg drop, right?
Yep.
Yes, it was.
I mean, he got the best of him every time, and then he left. Probably didn't get paid off as well as It didn't pay off Vince McMahon as well as you would expect, but
well, he accidentally switched his urine sample with Whippleman's.
Yeah.
On the
whatever works
there.
Yeah. Whatever works, but yeah. So here we go. There's Ric Flair. He comes in from the opposition, tears shit up, puts on one of the greatest 60-minute spectacles that any wrestler's ever put on. Great storytelling again by Pat Patterson and any wrestler who was involved.
Yeah.
All the history involved just makes for a classic matchup. I, you know what, with now that we're so far removed from the territories, I don't know if we'll ever see a match with that many stories and sub-stories and that much history involved, which is really kind of too bad.
No, we never will. Because if you look at it, I mean, they couldn't even – they can't book SmackDown separate from Raw. They can't book they couldn't book ECW to the point where they would just leave people on ECW. I mean – if Vince McMahon has to own something and then he's going to make everything homogeneous and it's not, there's not going to be people coming in with different characters because TNA can't book and people don't watch anything else. I mean, these days are over. I mean, I don't want to end this on a sour note, but I mean, again, I try to watch wrestling and occasionally you get that match or that moment where you're like, okay, this was really cool. It was worth watching. It was worth investing my time. But it's not all that often, in my opinion.
Nope.
That's why I only do history stuff.
There you go. Well, speaking of which, Dan, I think you had mentioned at one point, I mean, you talked about the Flair DiBiase hour-long match. I think, didn't you bring that up as a possibility for another Mystery Science Theater-style audio?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that hour is so great of television. And again, I don't know if Dusty would have a way to get that duplicated legally or buy it himself or whatever. But if while that's in his possession, if he wanted to do that, it would be worth doing because. I mean, that, you know, the match itself is about 8 to 10 minutes, I think, actually. But it's the hour of Mid-South that lasts, you know, about 45 minutes, obviously, because they cut all the commercial breaks. And it's just, you've got Bill Watts giving this interview of, we've got to warn you, some people may not be able to handle this on TV. We put a pressure bandage on his blood, but that may not hold, and it may be tough to watch. So I just want to warn you people that you may want to take the kids out, and you may want to turn the channel, which just made you think, holy shit, I want to watch this.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, you've got Bill Watts just being brilliant with booking it and selling it before the match. You've got Jim Ross announcing. And you know, the other thing you've got is you've got some squash matches during the match where they're talking about and building up, oh, well, you know, it's really too bad Ted DiBiase can't wrestle. And it's just the whole hour is just brilliant. And it's the best hour of TV wrestling I've ever seen.
Cool. Yep.
And I watched it live out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, Channel 23, on a Sunday afternoon because we happened to have, you know, we had a big rotor at our house and it happened to be real cloudy. And I was sitting in front of my TV and just, you know, it was fading in and out. But I was watching this and my mother's like, what are you doing? You're watching all this fuzz on the TV. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to watch
Mom,
the rest
of this. Like a shining light.
Yeah.
It's coming over my TV like a beam from heaven.
I wasn't missing it. So, but no, that would be an hour to do. If we're looking for candidates of things to do, that would be one. We talked about the Flair Funk I Quit match, which is easier to get a copy of. Obviously, we probably all have that. It doesn't all have to be about Ric Flair. I mean, the nice thing about this is, obviously, you're telling stories about different guys over the course of the hour. But, you know, you think about Flair Steamboat, any of those matches. We could do a Battle Bowl.
There you go.
I mean, just kind of, you know, a lot of Mystery Science Theater is done for really bad programs. So,
Well,
there'd be a lot of stories to tell
hours,
if we did.
We could do Great American Bash 91 since you mentioned
that. Oh, my God.
That
would be
I do not own that, but yeah, if you can give me a copy.
Really?
I have the, you know, I have the Starrcade DVD, which has one of these battle bowls on there, so that's why I brought that up.
Nice.
Yep. Okay.
Fantastic.
Maybe
cool.
Some of the Stunt Granny Nation, the Stunt Granny Universe, could suggest shows that they would like
yeah.
to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Leave a comment on this post or talk to us in the forum. We'll get a post started for this forum.
And I was very, you know, Stunt Granny business. I was confident when Dusty beat me in fantasy football that he was going to win the championship. And
I am.
It doesn't look good for you. Are you? You're not playing. Who's got Adrian Peterson's not playing tonight? So who do you have left? Shenko. Who do you have?
I have Greg Olsen, and he's done. So it's Greg Olsen against nobody, and Olsen has 4 points right now, and I am down by 4.
Oh, you
so.
Probably will win then.
Well, you know.
Because the game hasn't been going that long. So there you go.
Jake,
the point per reception really changes things.
A touchdown would win it for me. So
well, you don't even need that. You need 2 catches for 20 yards, and who gets the tiebreaker? Who's the higher seed?
Well, beggars can't be choosers, so I'll take whatever.
I had a real dilemma last night, and people don't want to hear this anymore as we're doing the audio, but I'm in 3 fantasy football leagues. Your guys is the third, I'm sorry, because it's free, A. I like to play for money. B.
Oh, that's fine. You're a last-second fill-in anyway.
Well, B, you know, it's harder to talk trash to you guys because I don't interact with you enough. And so if you're not talking trash, what's the point? And so the other one I'm in with the guys I went to school with, the same guys that were like, who won Ric Flair Royal Rumble at the fraternity, I lost that one even though I had the best regular season record, so I made a little money. But then this other league I'm in, the guy that runs it, and people may want to quit listening now. We may cut this off the audio, whatever. I don't know. But I've actually, since I'm done teaching, I've broken into the adult beverage because I can do that
hey,
now. Which I
I'm about to have a Heineken, too. That's my sippy time beer.
I actually have the single barrel going here, so it's a nice thing. But long story short, last night I set up my team where I have the Green Bay defense going, okay? And I'm in the first round of the playoffs. And if you win the Super Bowl in this thing, you get $400. I mean, it's not, it's not nothing. You know, there's 16 people in there. We all put $60 in or whatever. And you know, there's money for all this different stuff. But you know, you win the Super Bowl, it's a nice little chunk of change.
Yeah.
And so you know, this is meaningful. And so I set it up where I had. Corliss, the tight end for Green Bay, because my tight ends are terrible, and the Green Bay defense left, and I'm winning by 2 points. The problem is if you play your defense and they allow 35 points, you get -6.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So theoretically, I could lose the game if I play the Green Bay defense.
Right.
So I call my buddy. I say, Bob, I say, you know what? I said, here I am. I'm ready to win, and I think I'm going to bench my defense. I just want to make sure I'm not going to get disqualified or whatever. And he's like, well, there's no rule against it. I can tell he was upset. He's commissioner of the league. I'm not playing him.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, this happened in this other league, and this guy kicked this guy out of the league, and there was a big fight and blah, blah, blah. And I could tell this is my boy. I mean, I like this guy. And he's like the nicest guy in the world. And I was like, damn, what am I – I could tell he was really upset about it. So long story short, at first I benched my defense, but then I put him back in and just took my chances and I won. But,
wow.
You know, because they allowed, what, 31 points?
Yeah.
And they had 3 or 4 sacks. But their defense – it's a Yahoo league, so their defense only allowed 24 points. So I was pretty safe. But, you know, had New England scored 35 points, I probably would have lost.
Yeah.
And my question is, that was my moral dilemma. Do I just say, okay, Bob, you know, I might have picked up a different defense if I had known this.
Right.
Maybe I should – I'm just going to bench him the heck with it, but I didn't. I don't know. I'm not explaining my dilemma very well, but I really – I mean, it was like an hour of calling my buddies, and everybody's like, no, you bench him. You're playing for money, the heck with that. I mean, you don't have to worry about that. But
that would be my rule, yeah. You're trying to win the money, so –
I was too nice of a guy, I guess. I mean, but it all ended well, so it was okay.
I wish I could remember the entire situation that my bass player Max just went through to make it at least somewhat a tenth as dramatic as your story was, but the crux of it is that he usually starts Matt Castle, but of course Matt Castle was out last week, and Max was like, as the week was going
but
on.
But Dusty beat me with Matt Castle, so thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, I know. I didn't check in time to change it, and it didn't matter, so that was a happy coincidence.
Well, as the week progressed and the weekend went on, Max looked like he was on the verge of losing, and he was like, he was up by, God, I don't remember exactly what it was, but the point is, the quarterback he ended up starting got him negative 0.87 points. I don't know how the fuck he did it. He came out, I swear to God, he came out by like a quarter of a point or something like that and actually won. But he said, if I would have started Matt Castle over this asshole,
I wouldn't have to worry
about it. Yep.
No, it was like, it's 7 o'clock last night, and I got to make a decision by 7:20, and my buddy's like, you've won. You're an idiot. Just put the guys on the bench, and it's over, and don't worry about it. And I was like, dude, my buddy's so upset. I mean, he's the commissioner, and, you know, do I really want to – is it – I mean, you know, is it worth it to, like – I mean, he was cool about it, but I could tell he was really upset. He's like, oh, God, this puts me in the worst spot ever.
Right.
I had a big guilt trip, so I felt bad, so I played them. So I was quite upset if they would have lost, but I just, yeah. But now I know. It's like, okay, I've got to know that I'm going to play a full team no matter what. So.
Right.
But that wasn't as bad as when my buddy lost a fantasy football game because he had it won. Brett Favre had 12 rushing yards, and they were way ahead, and he took a knee three times, and he went to 9 rushing yards, and he lost a point and lost. Like,
wow.
He's celebrating. This is like the playoffs. And he's celebrating. He's all excited. He's calling me. He's like, I won. And I was like, well, it says here you're tied, and I know you don't have the tiebreaker. And he's like, yeah, nice try. And then he went back and saw that because Brett Favre had taken a knee three times, he lost a point.
That's
That's pain there. That's the worst.
That's pain. That's crying the blues. Well, that's hard times. There we go. Something like that.
There you go. Yeah, I guess, you know, if they could have brought Dusty Rhodes back for this Royal Rumble, it might have.
Oh, God, that would have been
but
incredible.
I guess he was booking in WCW by now.
Yeah. Funny. All right. Well, let's wind this up then. Cool. I hope everyone enjoyed this format of Stunt Granny Audio, and we've already got a few ideas for doing this in the future. If anyone else has more ideas, please deposit them in, like I said, the comment area of this post or go to the forum, and we're going to talk about it there. And definitely open to more ideas and doing this as often as we possibly can. So, Dan Keister, really appreciate you doing the show with us, our resident historian. It's always awesome to talk to you.
Hey, you know what? I mean, they're taking applications over at the Torch. A, I'm too lazy to follow a schedule. And B, I'm at home at the greatest wrestling website in the world. So, I have no interest in expanding my horizons beyond that. So, I appreciate the invitation.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'm going to sign off to you. Like I said, I'm going to pull a Kevin and have a sippy time beer. Carly got me a 10-pack thing called Beers of the World, and I still got a Heineken left in here, and among other things. So I think I'm going to drink that and call it a night. So
I'm hoping you got a few in there that are a little more. I mean, I like Heineken as much as the next guy, but is it like Heineken and Michelob and?
No. Let's see. I had a Red Stripe two nights ago. I had the Grolsch from Holland last week, which is pretty tasty. I got a Guinness and a Smithwick's here, but I intend to make a blacksmith out of that here someday.
That's cool.
Light. Got a nice tasty Pilsner Urquell. Boy, I must be drunk already. I can't even say it. So definitely plenty of beer to choose from here in my Dr. Dre fridge. Open it up and see all the fucking bottles of liquor. So I'm going to have a sippy time beer and call it a night, kids.
All right. Well, For Dan Keister, for Eric Nelson, for beer, and for Sid getting totally robbed in a disgraceful fashion, I am Dusty Giebing, and this has been another edition of Stunt Granny Audio, and we're going to try to do better the next time.